Section 5. The objections, that they show respect to God, and experience some religious affections, answered: natural men may be ready to object the respect they show to God, from time to time. This makes many to think that they are far from being such enemies to God. They pray to Him in secret, and attend on public worship, and take a great deal of pains to do it in a decent manner. It seems to them that they show God a great deal of respect. They use many very respectful terms in their prayer. They are respectful in their manner of speaking, their voice, gestures, and the like. But to this I answer, that all this is done in mere hypocrisy. All this seeming respect is feigned. There is no sincerity in it. There is external respect, but none in the heart. There is a show, and nothing else. You only cover your enmity with a painted veil. You put on the disguise of a friend, but in your heart you are a mortal enemy. There is external honor, but inward contempt. There is a show of friendship and regard, but inward hatred. You do but deceive yourself with your show of respect, and endeavor to deceive God, not considering that God looks not on the outward appearance, but on the heart. Here consider particularly, 1. That much of that seeming respect which natural men show to God, is owing to their education. They have been taught from their infancy that they ought to show great respect to God. They have been taught to use respectful language, when speaking about God, and to behave with solemnity, when attending on those exercises of religion, wherein they have to do with Him. From their childhood, they have seen that this is the manner of others, when they pray to God, to use reverential expressions, and a reverential behavior before Him. Those who are brought up in places where they have, commonly from their infancy, heard men take the name of God in vain, and swear and curse, and blaspheme, they learn to do the same. And it becomes habitual to them. And it is the same way, and no other, that you have learned to behave respectfully towards God. Not that you have any more respect to God than they. But they have been brought up one way, and you another. In some parts of the world, men are brought up in the worship of idols of silver, and gold, and wood, and stone, made in the shape of man and beast. They say of them, "Let the men that sacrifice, kiss the calf." Hosea 13:2. In some parts of the world, they are brought up to worship serpents, and are taught from their infancy to show great respect to them. And in some places, they are brought up in worshiping the devil, who appears to them in a bodily shape, and to behave with a show of great reverence and honor towards Him. And what respect you show to God has no better foundation. It comes the same way, and is worth no more. 2. That show of respect which you make is forced. You come to God, and make a great show of respect to Him, and use very respectful terms, with a reverential tone and manner of speaking. And your countenance is grave and solemn. You put on a humble aspect, and use humble, respectful postures, out of fear. You are afraid that God will execute His wrath upon you, and so you feign a great deal of respect, that He may not be angry with you. Through the greatness of thy power shall thine enemies submit themselves unto thee. Psalm 66:3. In the original it is, "Shall thine enemies lie to thee?" It is rendered therefore in the margin, "Shall yield feigned obedience to thee." All that you do in religion is forced and feigned. Through the greatness of God's power, you yield feigned obedience. You are in God's power, and He is able to destroy you. And so you feign a great deal of respect to Him, that He might not destroy you. As one might do towards an enemy that had taken him captive, though he at the same time would gladly make his escape, if he could, by taking away the life of him who had taken him captive. 3. It is not real respect that moves you to behave so towards God. You do it because you hope you shall get by it. It is respect to yourself, and not respect to God, that moves you. You hope to move God by it to bestow the rewards of His children. You are like the Jews who followed Christ, and called Him Rabbi, and would make Him a king. Not that they honored Him so much in their hearts, as to think Him worthy of the honor of a king, or that they had the respect of sincere subjects. But they did it for the sake of the loaves. Jesus perceived that they would come and make Him a king. And when they had found Him on the other side of the sea, they said unto Him, "Rabbi, how camest thou hither?" Jesus answered and said unto them, "Verily, verily I say unto you, ye seek Me, not because you saw the miracles, but because ye did eat of the loaves, and were filled. John 6:15, 25, 26. These things do not argue but that you are implacable enemies to God. If you examine your prayers and other duties, your own consciences will tell you that the seeming respect which you have shown to God in them has been only in hypocrisy. Oftentimes you have set forth in your prayers that God was a great, a glorious, and an infinitely holy God, as if you greatly honored Him on the account of these attributes. And, at the same time, you had no sense in your heart of the greatness and glory of God, or of any excellency in His holiness. Your own consciences will tell you that you have often pretended to be thankful. You have told God that you thanked Him you was alive, and thanked Him for various mercies, when you have not found the least jot of thankfulness in your heart. And so you have told God of your own unworthiness, and set forth what a vile creature you was, when you have had no humble sense of your own unworthiness. If these forementioned restraints were thrown off, you would soon throw off all your show of respect. Take away fear, and a regard to your own interest, and there would soon be an end to all those appearances of love, honor, and reverence, which now you make. All these things are not at all inconsistent with the most implacable enmity. The devil himself made a show of respect to Christ when he was afraid that he was going to torment him. And when he hoped to persuade Christ to spare him longer, when he saw Jesus, he cried out and fell down before him, and with a loud voice said, "What have I to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of God Most High? I beseech thee, torment me not." Luke 8:28. Some may perhaps object against this doctrine of their being God's enemies, the religion's affections they have sometimes experienced. They may be ready to say that when they have come before God in prayer, they have not only used respectful terms and gestures, but they have prayed with affection. Their prayers have been attended with tears, which they are ready to think showed something of the heart. But to this it is answered that these affections have risen from other causes, and not from any true respect to God one. They have risen from self-love, and not love to God. If you have wept before God, from the consideration of your own pitiful case, that has been because you love yourself, and not because you had any respect to God. If your tears have been from sorrow for your sins, you have mourned for your sins, because you have sinned against yourself, and not because you have sinned against God. When ye fasted and mourned, did ye at all fast unto me, even unto me? Zechariah 7:5. 2. Pride, and a good thought of themselves, very commonly has a great hand in the affections of natural men. They have a good opinion of what they are doing when they are praying, and the reflection on that affects them. They are affected with their own goodness. Men's self-righteousness often occasions tears. A high opinion of themselves before God, and an imagination of their being persons of great account with Him, has affected them in their transactions with God. There is commonly abundance of pride in the midst of tears. And often pride is in a great measure the source of them. And then they are so far from being an argument that you are not an enemy to God, that on the contrary, they are an argument that you are in your very tears, you are, in a vain conceit of yourself, exalting yourself against God. 3. The affections of natural men often arise from wrong notions they have of God. They conceive of God after the manner they do of men, as though He were a being liable to be wrought upon in His affections. They conceive of Him as one whose heart could be drawn, whose affections can be overcome, by what He sees in them. They conceive of Him as being taken with them, and their performances. And this works on their affections. And thus one tear draws another, and their affections increase by reflection. And oftentimes they conceive of God as one that loves them, and is a friend to them, and such a mistake may work much on their affections. But such affections that arise towards God, as they conceive Him to be, is no argument that they have not the same implacable hatred towards God, considered as He really is. There is no concluding that men are not enemies, because they are affected and shed tears in their prayers, and the like. Saul was very much affected when David expostulated with them about pursuing after him, and seeking to kill him. David's words wrought exceedingly upon Saul's affections. And it came to pass when David had made an end of speaking these words unto Saul, that Saul said, "Is this thy voice, my son David?" And Saul lifted up his voice and wept. 1 Samuel 24:16, chapter 26:1, etc. He was so affected that he wept aloud, and called David his son, though he was but just before seeking his life. But this affection of Saul was no argument that he did not still continue in his enmity against David. He was David's mortal enemy before, and sought his life. And so he did afterwards. It was but a pang his enmity was not mortified or done away. The next news we hear of Saul is, that he was pursuing David, and seeking his life again.
This Reformation audio track is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. SWRB makes thousands of classic Reformation resources available, free and for sale, in audio, video, and printed formats. Our many free resources, as well as our complete mail order catalog, containing thousands of classic and contemporary Puritan and Reform books, tapes, and videos at great discounts, is on the web at www.swrb.com. We can also be reached by email at swrb@swrb.com, by phone at 780-450-3730, by fax at 780-468-1096, or by mail at 4710-37A Avenue, Edmonton, that's E-D-M-O-N-T-O-N, Alberta, abbreviated capital A, capital B, Canada, T6L3T5. You may also request a free printed catalog. And remember that John Calvin, in defending the Reformation's regulative principle of worship, or what is sometimes called the scriptural law of worship, commenting on the words of God, which I commanded them not, neither came into my heart, from his commentary on Jeremiah 7:31, writes, God here cuts off from men every occasion for making evasions, since he condemns by this one phrase, I have not commanded them, whatever the Jews devised. There is then no other argument needed to condemn superstitions than that they are not commanded by God. For when men allow themselves to worship God according to their own fancies, and attend not to his commands, they pervert true religion. And if this principle was adopted by the papists, all those fictitious modes of worship in which they absurdly exercise themselves would fall to the ground. It is indeed a horrible thing for the papists to seek to discharge their duties towards God by performing their own superstitions. There is an immense number of them, as it is well known, and as it manifestly appears. Were they to admit this principle, that we cannot rightly worship God except by obeying his word, they would be delivered from their deep abyss of error. The prophet's words, then, are very important, when he says that God had commanded no such thing, and that it never came to his mind, as though he had said that men assume too much wisdom when they devise what he never required, nay, what he never knew.